Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. My name is Firecrow Silver Knight, and today's episode is Knowledge versus Muscle. And at a glance, it sounds a bit like either, you know, muscle is going to be used in this term of like, tough it out, keep going, and knowledge is going to be this like, knowledge is power. And that's actually not the direction I'm going to take this conversation in. Knowledge in this case is the kind of thing once you learn once you can apply and you will never really forget. And muscle is the kind of thing that no matter how much you know what to do, you still have to do it a lot of times to build up the capacity to do it adequately or do it better and better. It's any skill or ability that falls into the use it or lose it. And for me, what really keyed me out of this in an interesting way was that I had a moment in my life where I really wanted to get in shape. And I'd always heard good things about push-ups. I'd never really been able to do very many of them, embarrassingly. And so I realized I could only do 4 or 5 at a time. And I then realized that, if I take like a 30-second break, I can do 4 or 5 more, and 4 or 5 more. What was interesting was doing this twice a day, I could do 15 and then 3 of those sets in a row. So a total of 45 in a row twice a day in a matter of like a month or something, like really a short period of time. My body changed. I started to look better. I had broader shoulders. I felt better. And I thought about that idea that if someone asked me on day one to do, you know, 45 push-ups right now or else, I would not have been able to do it. It would have been like completely outside of possibility. There would have been no way. And there are a lot of things in life that are like this where it's hard to get going because you cannot do what you want to do today. You can't find a job today. You're going to have to go through the motions of not just applying to a lot of places, but you're going to have to apply to a lot of places to figure out why they're not accepting you. And then you're going to have to apply somewhere else. What has worked for me in restaurants is ignoring anything listed online, such as a job posting site like Indeed or ZipRecruiter, because those restaurants are so flooded with so many experienced candidates. The people I, at the beginning of my career, actually need to talk to are the people who are too busy to put a listing like that online. And I just walk in the door and say, hey, you need help in your kitchen? That's where I have had the success. Well, if you were to ask me to find a job tomorrow at the beginning of this process, I would not have known that it was going to take 3 weeks of going on, you know, job hunting based interviews and getting rejected to realize that I had to change strategy. And this seems a bit like a knowledge-y thing. But really, it's the kind of thing where if you ask me day one, find a job, it's the kind of thing I had to develop by doing it to make it work. And that's why I say it's like a muscle thing. And I think planning falls into this category. Financial management falls into this category. Skills like cooking and software engineering fall into this category, where there really is no school you can go to that will supplement the time you have to spend. And I actually think the best things in life are in this muscle category where you have to spend time. And I feel at times, like especially American culture, is very allergic to exuding effort in any way, to spending time. And I kind of think that everything worth doing really takes time spent on it. So after the break, I'm going to talk a bit about transformative business and a few examples of what I consider to be transformative businesses. And for me, the term transformative is when, you know, a dollar becomes $1.50 or a dollar becomes $2, as opposed to now that we own the dollar, we can take 15 cents out of it. Like this, that's sort of the territory business model that I think is oftentimes mistaken as actual business. The Compare Basic update is basically that I am polishing the software and I will eventually, you know, release this tool set and then kind of revisit what to make of it sometime, hopefully later in the year, because the business side is collapsing. Back after the break. All right, with some somewhat dystopian 90s techno from my bedroom to usher in the topic. I've been thinking a lot lately about, what is a business, and I think like a lot of people right now, I'm very interested in redefining everything because I get this real big sense that like there's been a lot of a sort of buy-in of storytelling conventions that don't really work. Chasing quarterly earnings isn't really business. It's just this weird like corporate ritual that people fall into, and that's the number one complaint that I hear from people. I've never actually been high up enough in a business where that was discussed. I've just kind of got the sort of downwind stream of no, we can't build anything interesting because we have to, impress the shareholders with some story, even though they don't, really know what they're talking about in terms of the way that we make money. That's the sense at least. And so for me, the concept of wealth, it goes way beyond money. I mean, money is how we track wealth, but essentially, if you take a car and that car is worth, say, $20,000, right? And you value this car as a way to get to work. Well, the metal and the electronic wiring and the tires and the transmission, all of that stuff sitting on a shelf is not worth, what the car's worth. Let's say the car's worth $20,000. Well, that metal is worth nowhere near that unassembled. And when it's in the something you can use as a car, all of a sudden it's worth, $20,000. And if you further consider that one of the reasons that car is worth $20,000 is because that brand of car has a reputation that it will last a certain amount of time. So now you can say it's not just that the parts on the shelf are worth less than the car assembled, it's that the car assembled and certified from that manufacturer has a resale value based on the reputation of that manufacturer. So now we're talking about brand value, and we're talking about the complete finished product versus the raw materials. And the concept here is that that car company has transformed those raw ingredients into something of value, and that process is the generation of wealth. So take another example. I'm working in a restaurant. We run out of cilantro or we run out of lettuce. The owner runs to a local grocery store, grabs it, brings it back. We chop it, we put it in meals. Without those ingredients, we would not be able to sell many, many, many of our recipes. And so our booth is worth nothing without those ingredients. Now, 3 heads of lettuce and maybe, 10 chunks of cilantro can keep us open for about 4 hours. And within 4 hours, we sell many, many meals, and people are paying, $15, maybe $10, maybe $20. Sometimes we get people pay $45, $60 at a time. And to get we're a takeout booth, these are considerably massive amounts of money given that those 3 heads of lettuce and heads of cilantro was probably a total of like, $35, $40. So the concept I'm trying to portray here is that wealth generation is the composition of raw ingredients or unusable ideas or unsolved problems whereby something is transformed and then exchanged from the person selling it to the person buying it. And now the person buying it has some massive value. They can travel to work, they can eat a meal they enjoy eating. And it's such a massive increase in value that theoretically it should pay a fair wage for the time involved in this transformation happening. The reason I'm talking so much about transformative business is that my entire career, people have said, oh, businesses have to watch their bottom line. And if you believe that the bottom line is the balance from, revenue and expenses, and it merges into one line as the balance line at the bottom. Fine, bottom line. But in most cases, that bottom line story is you just got to watch expenses. And the more I looked at businesses trying to really start my own these last few years, the more I really realized that that is actually the absolute wrong way to think about a business, because cutting cost and managing cost is important. But it is only one of many, many things that are important. And the thing that is the most important is that on a daily, weekly, yearly basis, the efforts of your operation, whatever it is, produce more wealth than they consume. And yeah, you can keep your lights on. And the more I think about this model of business and sort of let go of the academic, people buy stuff for one of three reasons, because it's better, cheaper, or more convenient. It's like, fuck you. I absolutely fuck you. That's got nothing to do with actual business. Actual business is the reason that you have used the same car brand for 20 years because there's something you like about them. Actual business is the corner store restaurant that makes you feel better every time you walk in and out of there because they produce good food that has an authentic feel to it. That's actual business. Actual business is the film company whose movies you wait to come out because they tell stories that touch you better than everything else. It's not these goddamn three principles of like cheaper, better, convenient. No, it's really not. And here's where things get really interesting to me. As I look at the restaurant industry that I'm working in, there's always this idea of something from a long time ago, something from just now, and something a little bit in the future. And here's what I mean by that. We're always making sauces and prepping things days or even like a week before. And the reason you do that is because there's certain richness of flavor you can only get by like cooking certain things for a few hours at a time. You also want to prepare things so that they can happen just in time. So you want to portion the burger so you can fry them without like, making sure you grab the right amount of ground beef or have the cauliflower sliced so that when you fry it, you don't have to like chop it and then fry it. But other things such as jalapenos, and cilantro, you want freshly chopped. But onions, you want them freshly chopped because green onions, another one, it loses flavor very quickly. So you have this vastly balance of time. And what I say about a little bit in the future, it's because many, many things are so hot when they're just cooked that you actually can't eat them right away. And so the time it takes for your server to bring them from the kitchen to your table is actually really instrumental. I was at one kitchen where they actually put raw onions sliced really thin in the soup, and they would cook during this time. And you would get like a slightly raw, slightly cooked onion in your soup. And it was designed that way so that it actually kept cooking on the way to the customer. So that's the little bit in the future part. But it got me thinking about something that I had heard when I was looking at an entrepreneurial community as a teenager. Essentially, it was like someone from the local university came down to talk to a youth group, and he said a bunch of things that I thought were brilliant and really made sense about business. And then he said, "Don't ever get into restaurants." And I thought to myself, "This doesn't make any sense. Why never get into restaurants?" And he says, "Everyone I know has lost all their money when they've invested in restaurants." And the funny thing is, now I know why, and it's gross. It's just disgustingly sad. Basically, restaurants have what every business has, but in more extreme and larger proportions. And here's what it is. Restaurants have very perishable ingredients that have a very specific shelf life. And if you don't use them, you end up losing money by throwing food away, either food that was a raw ingredient, like an onion that hasn't been cut open, or a sauce that you prepared, or the like prepared ingredients of a dish you didn't sell. And then, in addition to that, anyone can come in and out of the restaurant and buy a variety of meals. And the weather generally affects the foot traffic. And so what you have essentially in a business is unpredictability. And you have to affect the heart and soul of the city or town that you're in to attract a following, and you have to deliver consistency under extraordinary circumstances, extraordinary short time window expectations. And you must basically do a good job, or the customers can very easily return the product to you if it's not cooked properly. You then have to manage a caliber of employee staff that's known for being somewhat temperamental. You also then have to deal with constant turnover and people coming and leaving because it is seen kind of as an entry-level job. One of the stories I do actually see and I'm able to verify is that when people have kids, they usually leave the restaurant industry. Usually, it's seen as the kind of schedule that someone does either earlier or later in their life. And so restaurants have all the same things other businesses have, but they have that uncertainty in massive ways. And so when I heard this entrepreneur professor person say, whatever you do, don't go into restaurants, I'm starting to understand that this might actually be what frustrates me so much about the entrepreneurial community. They are so devoid of ambition in the sense of restaurants have the problems that the business world actually needs to solve, which is just-in-time assembly, just-in-time staffing, variable customer purchasing patterns, and transient raw material pricing. So let's speculate for a second that the American dollar's value is cut in half. This is sadly not that unrealistic of an assumption given how badly the American government has bothered the rest of the world, what's happening with oil prices. But even if it's not half, what if it's a quarter? Well, guess what happens to food cost prices? Guess what happens to transportation prices? Guess what happens to all raw materials as we import, maybe metals we don't produce w within our borders? It means that the cost of ingredients is gonna, cost of raw materials for any business is gonna go way up. Or it's gonna go way down. Or it's gonna just bounce around in unpredictable ways. And guess what industries have no experience with this kind of stuff? Almost everybody except restaurants. And basically, a manufacturing co company that has designed really shallow margins, a retail company, even though retail does have some transient cost associated with it, they've really made their bread and butter on narrow margins. And so basically, what's going to happen, in my opinion, is that everyone who has said, I'm a business person, but I will never touch something like restaurants because of the inconsistency, they are going to have a really hard time having a positive impact or staying on top of things or staying employed in an economy that is fluctuating. But guess who's going to do just fine? The people who understand that their job from the time they wake up in the morning to the time they go to bed is to find some way to deliver value to customers and organize their staff to do a transformative operation. To take whatever raw ingredients are available and make something of value out of them. Now, what do restaurants do when the price of beef skyrockets, or chickens are unavailable, or there's a certain vegetable they're missing? Well, some of them absorb the cost, some of them pass the cost on to their customers, and some of them improvise by just changing up the recipe. If you don't have the sort of irony, minerally flavor of beef, and instead you're substituting chicken. Maybe there's a spice change. Maybe you pair it with a different vegetable. Maybe the sauce changes. But you still find a way to deliver the ultimate experience, which is the organization of a group of people that can all order custom stuff, and you can make sure they all get it in the same time so that they can have a great night. The ambiance and the experience doesn't go away. The quality of the food doesn't go away. But if you say, move that into manufacturing where they don't have the part that fits into the thing that they have, cast as a machine, and that one part is required for the entire thing to run. How are they going to improvise? Right? The supply chains and the sort of structure of most businesses are not responsive to just-in-time business operations the way restaurants are. And I think basically what I'm getting to in my mind at this point is that there's a chance that just-in-time business is going to be a large factor of the next chapter of the economy, because it's going to be the kind of thing that you need to spin up and spin down. And a lot of the operational perfection that has been put in place to maximize efficiency at massive scale. So like if we make, a canning facility that can can this much food, it costs this much per can, but if we do it a million times in parallel in a giant warehouse, we've brought the cost down. That that has been the dominant model of economics that I have ever always seen, which is massive scale brings cost down, massive scale brings cost down. Well, yes, but massive scale also marries you to a single repeatable process. And if that single repeatable process becomes ineffective, you actually lose money on the entire process. Whereas smaller, more reactive, more just-in-time processes, print-on-demand processes, laser printers, CNC machines, in a fluctuating economy, these might actually all become more valuable. And so we might see is this massive churn from very large businesses that betted on having very narrow margins as their value to an inversion of that, which basically becomes just-in-time businesses that find transformational opportunities that become the ones that actually do well. So to bring this full circle in the knowledge versus muscle and why I'm talking about transformative business in a podcast about the difference between something you can know and something you must do and do and do and do and do to have the capacity to keep doing it and do it well. For a very long time, I have felt like the phrase knowledge is power really is something that I despise. And it's usually used in the context of this great equalizer of access to, knowledge is power, and so if people have the ability to learn, they have the ability to get ahead and whatever. But here's the thing. Applied knowledge can be argued as power, but you might as well just say action is power, right? Knowing what to do is not the same as doing it, and doing it wrong in a sensitive way that you can react to do it correctly is usually better than, waiting for the perfect strategy through knowledge, which won't stay the perfect strategy for long. I kind of see the phrase knowledge is power as like turning the steering wheel of a parked car, right? The car has to be in motion for the angle of the wheels to affect the position of the car. And if the car is not in motion, then all the knowledge in the world is just, turning the wheel of a car that's not in motion. And so to me, action really is power. I think this is one of the things that separates the capital class of people who try to gain wealth and a comfortable life through ownership versus the talent class, which, most people would call the working class, but I would lump in the working class and the white collar class into most of that. And it's the people who generate wealth through ability or through, delivering something. And I think to that end, action is actual power, and, talent and ability is the transformative process of producing actual wealth. And so this idea of what's a knowledge thing that you have and never lose, and what's a muscle thing that you do and do and do, and it builds up capacity, and all of a sudden you're capable of things you never thought you could because the building effect of burning up your muscles and then regrowing and doing something, all of a sudden it's going faster and better and of a higher quality than you ever thought you could set out to do. And that transformative process creates actual wealth. And the capital class needs to buy and sell that wealth to, scrape the cream off the top of the milk, so to speak, to survive the way that they do. But whether or not it's fair that that's happening, it's whether or not it's fair that, music industries, own the royalties to artists' music they had no real hand in producing. Whether or not it's fair is beside the point. The reality is that actual wealth comes from that transformative process. And whether we fix the economy or not, whether we fix the government or not, whether we have accurate tax structures or not, we still need that transformative process of wealth to increase and improve. And it's helpful to know that sometimes it's not worth waiting for the perfect knowledge or perfect strategy. And it's just a good idea to get going and get in the habit of doing the things we enjoy and we want to get better at. And get that talent and ability up into a great place, because no matter what is or isn't happening in, in this day and age in terms of, the reality of work, that idea of transformative business, I think, is an angle on delivering value and career success that I find really refreshing and really interesting. And As always, if you like the things I'm on about, you can go to comparebasic.com and have a look at what I'm working on there. And I'll see you soon. I hope to record these more regularly, but I guess let's hope it's a good thing that I got this one recorded.